Welcome to Game Buoy, where we talk about gaming news and issues that are not on your radar, but probably should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike. With me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Ahoy, mateys!
We have a few cool things to talk about this week, but first I want to follow up on Sega.
Sega!
You know, since our last our episode last week, where we were discussing Sega's inability to capitalize on their IP portfolio, it's really interesting. Knights HD has been announced for release on digital services.
Lots of people excited about that.
Yeah, Knights, you know, is a modern classic. It frequently gets comparisons to Super Mario 64. But I really feel like it's a completely different game. Like, I think the only real comparison is that they're both 3D games. Do you have any thoughts on Knights?
You know, I missed out on Knights because I was not a Dreamcast owner back when Dreamcast had its short life.
Okay, but Knights was a Saturn game.
And I also didn't own a Saturn.
You know, but that's fair because you're an American.
Yeah. Yeah, but, so, you know, I kind of missed out on that era of Sega, but, you know, I mean, I'm excited that, you know, they're bringing it back because now it'll finally give me a chance. I mean, yes, I could download it, like, and play it. I mean, I don't know what I would emulate it on, just PC, I guess, but, I mean, I think that this is probably a great opportunity for, people like myself to experience the game, because, you know, they're gonna remaster it for HD, you know, I don't know if they're going
to... Well, you know, and to step in here, there was a really great port of this game previously for PS2, but that didn't come out in the US. That was under the Sega Ages label in Japan, which was sort of their boutique label for, like, just some really amazing, like, crafted with care collections. And a lot of the stuff that we're seeing happen right now in the higher end of this sort of memorialization of games, a lot of these Sega Classic packs that have gone up on Xbox Live lately, which we've talked about in previous episodes, you know, for Monster World, Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, a lot of these were Sega Ages releases in Japan for the PS2. And, you know, all of those have come through to Xbox Live just in super high quality. So I absolutely believe that this Knights HD Xbox Live, Steam, and PSN release is probably going to be really just an outstanding release.
And it'll have achievements! No, I'm kidding.
But yeah, you know, they also, Sega, capitalizing on their existing IPs, has announced, finally, that Phantasy Star Online 2 is going to be coming out in European and Northern American territories.
I saw a lot of fanboying and fangirling over the internet for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the PSO games were just... they were a cut above. They really were. I think probably, even among our small handful of listeners, whom we all love...
Love you.
Even among our small listeners, I bet we have people who played PSO. That game, it was everywhere when it hit, and it was just so high quality.
I mean, again, that era of Sega I missed out on, but, you know, it's interesting that everything looks so doom and gloom, and now it's like, wow, they're actually paying attention to some IPs that people want to see, you know, unlike Football Manager.
Well, Football Manager is one of their most profitable brands in the world.
True, but...
but it's certainly not what I want to see.
That's my point.
And I'll admit, I took a little bit of a different tack to the Sega news than I usually do. I generally try to be optimistic, but I was very upset over that.
Well, I mean, it looked like it was going to be... it looked bad. I mean...
But if this is what they mean when they say that, you know, boutique titles and niche titles will be done digitally, if this is the kind of support we're going to get, you know, Phantasy Star Online, Knights HD... we have, they announced a Sonic Adventure 2 HD, we've talked about Jet Set Radio HD, if this is the sign of things to come, I'm becoming very hopeful for
the next year of
Sega.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. What if they do Space Channel 5 HD with Kinect support?
Well, they already did a...
Choo, choo, choo!
They already did a digital release for Space Channel 5 Part 2.
That's right, they did.
So, I would love to see even just a release of the first one without Kinect support. But with Kinect support, I'll be honest, if I just had to pose and then say choo for choo, I would die. I would be so happy.
Right.
Hopefully everyone out there can agree with that sentiment. If not, you have poor taste and I feel bad for you.
True. And before we move on to
no,
our...
No, not really, but you were saying?
Before we move on to our Oh My God news segment, usually we don't solicit tweets quite this early in the show, but if there are any classic Sega, or even, you know, more recent-ish Sega IPs that you really would like to see, I mean, you know, we mentioned Space Channel 5. If there's anything that you're really excited about that you're hoping that Sega will kind of bring back in the same fashion, please tweet us at...
Yeah, tweet us. Sorry, I know that you wanted to do the tweet thing. We'll get to it. Yeah, just we want to hear from you. What games would you like to see Sega bring back? What IPs are they sitting on that it just doesn't make sense to you? If you want to say Knuckles Chaotix, go for it.
And we promise we will try not to laugh at you.
Okay, we will laugh, but we won't laugh at you. Is that a reasonable compromise?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, the funny thing is, I was going to say, if you really want to see a Sonic 3D Blast re-release, well, okay then.
Yeah, cool. Maybe they can do it right this
Although,
time.
Although, if they did that on 3DS, that might be interesting.
Yeah, Sonic 3D Blast 3D.
I still don't know if I would play it.
So anyways, you can tweet us at...
GameBuoy Podcast.
That's at GameBuoy Podcast. And we're going to mix things up a little bit, go a little out of order. I know it seems a little early in the show for this, but in fact, it's time for...
News. Oh my god, news.
So we're going to keep it short because I think our discussion topic this week is going to get, you know, a little bit bloated. But it's time for everyone's favorite Oh My God news. You want to kick us off?
So, we're not sure how many of you out there have been following the drama with Polytron and Fez. You know, the patch was causing some issues for a small amount of the player base, but, you know...
Yeah, I think they estimated less than 1%.
Less than 1%, but, you know, like, issues with save files, and so...
Well, and you know, the bitch of it is that this issue was happening to people who had reached the end of the game. There was some flag or some trigger that was erasing save games for people near the end of the game. So almost the people who put the most into the game were the ones getting bit by this. I'm sorry, I just felt that was... Continuing.
No, thank you for being a little more specific about what the issue was. So what Polytron had wanted to do was, in a way, just patch the patch, fix the little issues that were causing this, and put it back up. But Microsoft said, no, you can't do that without us treating it like a... whole new patch, for which you have to pay, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that, you know, when this first broke, Polytron, explained on their website, you know, that, you know, this is what the issue is, Microsoft's gonna have to charge us, we're sorry to that less than 1%, but, you know, we hope that you'll continue to support us. The interesting thing is that post that they had on their site is now gone. And it's just like, oh, the patch is back up.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that, and I saw that Microsoft, I guess yesterday, issued a statement that, you know, and it was basically just sort of newspeak for lol, not our problem. They're like, Polytron and their investor Trapdoor made the decision not to work on an additional title update to Fez. Microsoft Studios chose to support this decision based on the belief that Polytron / Trapdoor were in the best position to determine what the acceptable quality level is for their game. While we do not disclose the cost of title updates, we did offer to work with Trapdoor to make sure that wasn't a blocking issue. And that's well and good, but I'll be honest, I trust Polytron/Trapdoor to treat the player base right more than I trust Microsoft to do the same.
Yeah, and I mean, this, you know, this news post that they had on their site is now gone, but people in the comments were like, it was really surprising. You know, some of them were just like, oh, that sucks, but, you know, some people were like, well, you know, it's your problem for making a poor decision and not choosing to release it on Steam by, like, you know, it's your problem for making it exclusive to, you know, Xbox Live. So, I mean,
So, I'm of two minds, because I'll admit, it seems really dumb to me that Fez isn't on Steam. I still don't really understand that decision. But by the same token, I really appreciate, as much as I hate some of the comments Polytron has made about Japanese game development sucking, and Japanese game design sucking, Fez is a great game. I really respect and support what they did, and I really respect and support how they've sort of communicated with the fans what's going on. So, while it is true that, you know, entitled gamers are going to feel entitled, and people are going to be rude, I appreciate that they communicated this situation to us. A lot of times we have these disputes, and there's never a solid answer for why this happened. We never find out why this patch or that patch wasn't done right, or fixed, or updated. In this case, we know pretty definitively exactly why this bug is being left.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the real thing for me that's kind of like, I don't know, it just, even though, you know, Microsoft did their little blah blah blah, we tried to work with them or whatever, that just, they just are coming across as really shady in this whole deal. And I mean,
it just came out like a soundbite to me. Like, oh yeah, you know, they made the best decision for them, but we couldn't work it out. Like, really? If you guys, I'm sure you guys could have worked it out.
I mean, and I don't know if I'm just overreacting, or if it's just that, and which I'll talk about a little later, that I'm really trying to support indie developers right now, but it makes me want to not support Microsoft, and, you know, if there, you know, in cases where there are things released for Steam that I could also get on Xbox Live Arcade, I'd rather get them on Steam.
Yeah,
which,
no,
you know,
absolutely.
It's not perfect, but I mean, a lot more supportive, I would say, than what it sounds like Microsoft's doing.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely
honestly,
agree.
As far as I know, the only people who have had problems with Steam are EA.
Well,
and we all know how well the Origin client is working.
There have been some indie developers who have said that, you know, if you're really, really small, it can be an issue to work with Valve to get onto Steam. In fact, Steam just did an outreach. They just started a new outreach, which we'll probably talk about next episode, for smaller independent developers. So, yeah, maybe Fez, when the project started, was that size, and maybe that figures into it. Certainly, by its release, it was like a superstar indie game.
Right.
I mean, I would now say that's one of the big indie games, but at the time, when it was first announced, it was definitely not. So maybe that factors into why no Steam. But certainly, I prefer everything to be on Steam wherever possible. I, like everyone listening to this, I assume, just spent a great deal of money on Steam's summer sale.
Mm-hmm.
So, very pro-Steam. I wish Fez was on it. Super bummed about this situation with this patch. I mean,
yeah,
that really sucks for both the people playing Fez. Fortunately, my save in the game was not far enough along to be affected by the bug. But I just, my heart goes out to the developers. They made a real good game. I needed them to put their money where their mouth is after they were totally bashing Japanese game design principles. But I really think they did. I think they turned out a really impressive
product.
And
I think what the community needs to remember is that it's not like game design is just a magical thing where you can make it all work. Bugs are going to happen.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, I dare anyone to name a title out there that does not have some sort of little glitch or bug in it.
It's practically, I mean, I don't know that I could say it's literally impossible. Maybe there is a game with no glitch or bug, but it's practically impossible for that to even exist. I mean, you look at things like Kotaku had a great article.
Wow. Really?
Words I never thought I'd say. About a glitch that people have just been starting to have fun and exploit in Final Fantasy VI. Well, in the U.S. release, Final Fantasy III.
Really?
Yeah, just...
They just discovered it?
And we'll post a link on that on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
But yeah, it basically involves getting an airship to appear in the very first section of Narsha Caves, which I guess since you've never played Six wouldn't mean much to you, but it's quite impressive.
Well, I mean, anything involving an airship early in the game sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, so... let's see, next big news hit. This was going to be a bigger talking point than it is now, but if you care, you probably already know. Ono-san over at Capcom, you know, he's been tweeting Darkstalkers 4, like, teasers for years, it feels like. And this year, he sort of has teased it more overtly than normal and has basically assured fans that they no longer need to do sort of all the hoops we've been jumping through to try and show Capcom that we want this game to exist, Darkstalkers. So... that's good news, and of course, you know, we'll have a link to an article on that if you want to read more about it, just in case you haven't heard. But, you know, long story short, it appears that there's a new Darkstalkers in development.
That is good news.
Yeah. And sort of why we shifted that to a small talking point is because some fairly large news story, well, quote, end quote,
it was from Kotaku.
Hit on, was that Friday?
Friday.
Oh gosh, please don't. So, I guess the long and the short of it is that Kotaku ran an article, and admittedly it is called Rumor, but Final Fantasy Versus 13 is dead.
Kotaku and your sensationalist headlines.
Right? So, I guess some tipster told Kotaku that Final Fantasy Versus 13 is dead, and Kotaku, in true Kotaku fashion, totally just ran with it as if it was the gospel of God, and talked about all of the reasons why over the years we should have seen this coming.
And then the worst part, which, I mean, it kind of makes me laugh, is that IGN ran the story, referring
IGN
to Kotaku?
IGN ran it, referring to Kotaku, Eurogamer,
G4 website.
Like, the whole gaming world is talking about Versus 13 being dead based on a Kotaku article.
On one hand, that makes me laugh. I'm like, oh, IGN, you're not relevant anymore. But on the other hand...
That's really sad.
How is Kotaku, this like, the go-to gaming news source...
And,
this is frightening.
You know, Kotaku was talking about how the last time Square mentioned or brought up Versus 13 in any context was back in, like, May, when they said they were preparing the next thing to show us, but there were some difficulties or something. I don't know, it occurs to me that last week, Theater Rhythm for 3DS got the theme song from Versus 13 as DLC...
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, like, oh, so we haven't seen anything since May.
I mean, you know,
they're
except
maybe
last
just
week.
Hard, maybe they're just hard at work, and, oh, hey, there's also this DLC. And, you know, I've seen a couple of people say that, oh, you know, maybe they're folding this into just being Final Fantasy 15, and that, you know, it's not that the game is totally being thrown out, it's just that instead of being part of the Fabula Novella Crystallis 13 or whatever... the whole thing was. Because, you know, Agito 13 is just Type 0.
Yeah, it became
now.
Type 0.
So, I mean, some people are like, okay, well, you know, it's maybe not dead, but, you know, maybe just not part of the 13 franchise.
You know, and that, I don't know that I think that's the case, since again, we just had DLC for Theater Rhythm that very specifically refers to Versus 13. But I would be more willing to accept that than I would be willing to accept that the game is outright canceled. I do not believe that that's the case. I don't even believe that this would be Final Fantasy 15. It just doesn't seem like a mainline Final Fantasy game.
That's the thing, like, from the little bit that we know about it, the gameplay style, I heard that it was... And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I...
Well, based on the footage that is out there that you can see on the internet for yourself, which we will totally link on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
It appears to be more of almost like a Kingdom Hearts style action game.
That's what I was
going to
say, or almost a little bit of a Vagrant Story-ish... I mean, maybe not so much, but, you know, a little more action-based.
It literally shares UI elements with Kingdom Hearts, based on what we've seen. Oh, yeah, I'm stoked for it. I love those games. But
the thing is that for a main series Final Fantasy game, although...
I don't believe that would fly.
Although, 14...
What? 14 is a great MMO. I don't really understand.
And who's playing it anymore?
Well, its numbers are going up every month, so...
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when your numbers are that low, it's not hard, but... Yeah, they've already fixed a lot of the problems.
I guess 2.0 is launching in a couple months, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and most of the gameplay side changes for that are now in effect.
Okay, well...
And my understanding is that it's quite a pleasant experience now.
Well, actually, that's positive news then, but, you know, I think the point that we're making is that... Although it's very possible that it could be folded into... to 15's development.
My gut tells me that at most we'll see it released as it is, maybe with a non-13 related name. Maybe just Final Fantasy Versus.
Maybe.
But I do not believe the game was cancelled. They very specifically say that development has been halted in this Kotaku article. I outright do not believe that. I think this is an unsubstantiated rumor being reported as basically fact, and I think it's really sloppy, and I think there's a ton of evidence to the contrary that people are just ignoring because they have blue balls for how long they've been waiting for this game.
And I mean, remember how long it took for 12 to come out in the US? They're like, oh, it's supposed to be out February of this year, and then it like took a whole other year, I think. And that was just to localize it, as far as I know.
Well, there have been, you know, game delays happen. Sometimes...
Especially from Squeenix.
Yeah.
So I don't know why people are like...
It's not like this is the first epically long
game
delay that they've ever had. I just think they announced the game way too early. Normally, we'd just probably now this year be hearing about it. And it looks like, based on everything Nomura has told the press, that we're going to be seeing the game in more... substantive ways starting this year.
And because there's something's coming up later this year, right? Is it Tokyo Game Show?
Tokyo Game Show.
That's what I thought.
And Nomura has previously indicated that we'd see Versus 13 at TGS this year.
So, I mean, hold your horses, people. Don't get your panties in a knot.
Yeah, people are impatient. They're jumping to conclusions. And again, maybe this should be discussed in Loltaku, but... Honestly, I just think this was poor reporting that got the whole gaming world on fire. And to me, we really need to look at why did this get the whole gaming world on fire?
And why
that's a problem.
Why are other people referring to... According to Kotaku...
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. We have a lot to talk about, and I think people can pretty much tell what the definitive GameBuoy opinion on this matter is. So I'm going to get super real with you for a minute now. If you listen to GameBuoy on a regular basis, you're probably aware of the fact that both of the hosts of this show are homosexuals.
What?
I know, right?
You're gay?
And we've had some fan feedback via Twitter. I wouldn't say questioning because that implies some sort of negativity, but pointing out that some of our reads on potentially homosexual situations on games is different from their own. And To me, that's actually fascinating.
I think it was really cool, and I think that it was pointed out in a positive way.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, definitely. So, I just wanted to sort of, for this week's discussion topic, I just sort of want to talk about representations of homosexuality in games. Obviously, this is going to be primarily Japanese games, but, you know, there's been definitely some American gays in games as well, and this is basically, I'm giving you a jump out point. If you have an issue with homosexuality, if you think, oh, they're cool, but I don't want to hear about all that, then by all means, this is your time to tune out, and please come back next week. We're not about to become like a super gay podcast, any more so than normal. But I would really like to have a real discussion on sort of, you know, I can think just off the top of my head of, you know, maybe 10 notable gays in games. I can think of, you know, probably 6 or 7 games with storylines that I think could be considered sort of gay storylines. And I just want to sort of talk about them, put them out there, and then, you know, maybe someone will pick up one of these games just to take a look.
I mean, we're talking about pretty prominent games. We're not talking about, you know, like, visual novels.
Oh, no.
Boys love visual novels.
No,
sort of things.
No, that's also not my kind of game.
Me either.
But, no, I'm talking about things like, you know, Metal Gear Solid. You have Vamp, you have Volgin, you have, was it Volgin or Volgin? A lot of times with those games, I end up having to turn the sound down because it gets so wacky with all the gunshots and explosions,
yeah.
And I'm just reading subtitles. But, you know, Volgin and Rykov, like, they weren't just gay. They were like, I'm gonna whip you and dominate you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pretty big games have had pretty overt homosexual themes. And, for example, Vamp, also Metal Gear, he is a stated bisexual, and that is, you know, that's a plot point for his character. Maybe straight people relate to those characters differently than I do, and I think that's very interesting. So, anyway, this is your jumping off point. If you're not interested, please jump off, turn this off. I don't want to offend you, I don't want you to be upset. If for some reason, certainly I don't intend for this to be a racy discussion, but if you think this is an inappropriate thing for your children to hear, tune out. Again, for me, I don't feel that way, but if you do, I respect that. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk about notable gays in games.
Hey!
okay, everybody gets one. Don't do that again.
So you were mentioning about the Metal Gear Solid men, and we're not just talking, when we say we're about gays in games, we're not just being like, Solid Snake is so hot.
And something else, you know, and when I made this list that we're looking at here that I made for us to refer to, I think it's also interesting that Olga in Metal Gear Solid, she sort of questions traditional roles of femininity in female representations in games.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. That could almost be a whole another discussion.
I think it probably will be.
And, you know, kind of
can two gay dudes have a discussion on feminism and feminist portrayals in games?
Yeah.
We might need a guest host for
that. And, you know, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but when we had briefly talked about One Up the other week, they had ran a whole series about women in gaming, so, I mean,
That is great. What 1UP is doing is just so,
yeah,
so impressive. I'm so happy.
Yeah, so anyways, back to the gays. You know, Zangief is a homosexual man.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize it, but, you know, the bear wrestler is also a bear.
Rawr.
Wrestler.
Sorry, I'm trying to hold back the gay comments, but
I figured you were either going to say rawr or woof, so. But, you know, and that sort of brings me to sort of an interesting thought, and I don't really know why this is, but a lot of fighting games have homosexual characters. You know, we have Zangief, we have Eagle, you know, from Street Fighter 1, he's in MVC 2, or, I'm sorry, not MVC 2, Marvel vs. SNK 2, not Marvel vs., Capcom vs. SNK 2, see what you made me do, Capcom, giving all of your games that are so similar? We also, you know, have Rasputin from World Heroes Perfect, an old SNK game. And, you know, the funny thing is, and I need to get a Neo Geo cart of World Heroes Perfect. He has this really great grab super move where, like, you grab your opponent and bushes appear and you throw them violently behind the bushes and, like, little hearts start coming up out of it. And you can only do that move against dudes. Like, if you're Rasputin and you try to do that move on a, like, female character, that won't happen.
That's kind of scandalous.
Yeah. Guilty Gear has a couple of, you know, and instead of gay characters or gay games, I'm going to start using the LGBT acronym.
I think that's very appropriate, yes.
Because Guilty Gear has, like, hella LGBT representation. And, you know, the easiest two to bring up are Venom, who is in a submissive relationship to another character in the game's storyline, who is also a man. And I mean submissive in this context in a S&M sort of way. And also Bridget, who is probably the most well-known transgender in sort of games.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of a really big deal back when Enchant Arms, and I'm sort of switching topic here, because we'll come back to that. There's sort of a fairly big LGBT character who is in fighting games, but she's not primarily a fighting game character, so I'm going to bring her up on her own. But it was a fairly big deal when Enchant Arms was announced. You know, it's sort of a somewhat obscure JRPG, but it was one of the first big JRPGs announced for the current generation of consoles, and it has an openly gay character who has a crush on the main character of the game. And while it's played for laughs, it's never really cruel or rude or disrespectful.
Right, I mean, the thing is that Enchant Arms kind of had a... It kind of was a humorous game. I mean, there were pizza golems, for crying out loud. So, I mean... But, I mean, yeah, you're right. There was nothing ever done out of...
But it's not cruel. It's not spiteful.
It's a playful game in a lot of ways, so...
Yeah. And, you know, sort of the one that... Sort of the character that started this discussion was... I will tell you my interpretation of Persona 4, Kanji's storyline, was very much that of a gay man coming to terms with being gay and not being attracted to women. But it was I was told, you know, that there is implication, and certainly, although I sort of wasn't thinking about it, there is one female character with whom he forms a rapport. So it really could just be a matter of questioning your sexuality and not being gay. Which, in fact, taken in that context, is almost more challenging and a more interesting thing to investigate within the context of a narrative or, you know, game. This sort of struggle that a lot of people go through where they're really identifying who they are. And, you know, I will, my replacement for Kanji, of course, I do have to point out that in Innocent Sin, Jin Kurosu is definitely gay. Like, I mean, it's definitely stated in the text, like, he has a crush on a dude. taking it back to Kanji, you know, his persona is a muscle builder with roses in his mouth at one point, you know, the dark Kanji. His actual persona is a super cool mecha robot with a skull, but, you know, Dark Kanji has the whole muscle men and roses in their mouth, so I definitely still think that Kanji is up for discussion. But, again, that's sort of the whole point that spurred this on, was that my take on that was totally different from the take of one of our listeners, and I just thought that was really cool. Shadow Hearts, a very famous series of JRPGs. I can't even really tell you all the gays in those games. There's, like, portrait collector gays, there's, like, muscle gays, there's femi gays. Like, there's just gays were up in there.
Yeah. I mean, and I I'm not intimately familiar with the Shadow Hearts franchise, but I mean, just being kind of an outsider on this, I mean, I'm still aware that it's basically, like, it basically screams, like, for doujinshi to be written about it. I mean, I haven't investigated, but I'm sure that it's just, like, that's probably a very profitable franchise in the doujin market.
Probably. You know, one that game that a lot of you played, and this is actually a Western-developed game, but in Bioshock, Sander Cohen, I really felt like the game was sort of communicating to you without outright stating, like, no, this man was gay. You might recall Sander Cohen, he was really awesome and crazy. He's referred to by several characters as an old fruit, and he pretty openly states that Andrew Ryan, you know, the game's antagonist, he refers to Andrew Ryan as, you know, the man I once loved. I didn't really feel like there was a lot of ambiguity there.
Yeah, I don't think we're talking about brotherly love there.
No. Going back to the Japanese side a little, of course, I was really impressed with Valkyria Chronicles, which, I mean, I'm impressed with that game in every way. If you have a PSP or a PS3, definitely look into the Valkyria Chronicles games. Sega published them. They're super, super good. But all troops that can be recruited in that game, they have asexual identity. Some of them are gay, some of them are bi, some of them are straight. And none of them are outcast, none of them are shunned. It's just totally one aspect of the character. You have some super femmy recruited soldiers who are just like, let's go out there and win! And, you know, their little, like, bio box will be like, likes or prefers men. And it's like, fuck yeah, that's great. And there is one named story character who is bi, you know, Ted, if you've played the game. Ted is, you know, is men or women. And that is just so progressive and awesome to me. Let's see. We're going to do our last Japanese one, which was in Streets of Rage 3. Well, I guess we'll have one more Japanese one after.
Yeah, because there's a Japanese one that I really would like to point out that people might not even consider. But go ahead.
Ash, in Streets of Rage 3, was a boss who was like a sort of the Japanese stereotype of like the hard gay. It's like, you know, leather and chains and the really funny thing is, you know, they removed him from the U.S. release just to avoid any and all LGBT issues. But in the Japanese game, once you defeat him, he's the one boss in the game that is recruitable into a playable character once you've beat him. So you can actually, once you've beaten this really, like, leather-clad, almost, like, Judas Priest-style gay, you can totally play as him, and he has his own moveset and everything.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, that was really cool and progressive in its own right, considering Streets of Rage 3 is, you know, an older game. But there's a couple of two prominent Western games that you have almost certainly played. They're both AAA games. Interestingly, they're both also from the same studio, but, you know, Rockstar.
Which is, I mean, when you say Rockstar and you talking about gay issues, you'd be like, really? But
yeah, no. And the cool thing about this is these two characters are both explore completely different avenues of sort of gay representations in all media. And of course, I'm talking about sort of in the positive light, you have Gay Tony, you know, from the Ballad of Gay Tony, who is like this successful businessman, and admittedly he's down on his luck and possibly a coke addict, but
yeah, I mean, but it's very real, and, you know, I haven't played it all the way through. I'm not that great at GTA games, but, I mean, I think the thing that's interesting is, yes, you do have characters who are like, oh, hey, faggot, or, you know, I mean, but, I mean, that's kind of the macho world that GTA games exist in, but the playable character...
I didn't feel like it was, "Urgh, faggot!" It was just like, "Ugh, faggot."
Yeah, but the playable character, Luis, you know, he is this guy's bodyguard. He's, like, you know, very early in the game mentions, you know, how Gay Tony helped him out. You know, he was in prison, but Gay Tony basically gave him a chance. And, you know, he is there to protect that guy and, you know, works in his gay clubs and that sort of thing. So, I mean, I think it's really, for a franchise like GTA, to have a character, a playable character like that, who is, like, you know, it's not, it doesn't really faze him that much in this macho world of, you know, and because main, especially mainstream, like, you know, media, and I'm not talking about games journalism, but, you know, there was the whole, was it the hot coffee mod or whatever, where you could,
yeah,
I mean, so basically, if you mention GTA to, like, a politician or something, you'd be like, oh yeah, prostitutes and violence, and that leads to the real thing, you know, but, I mean, I really applaud that, you
know. Yeah, a very positive, realistic depiction of what a, you know, homosexual character in that world would be like. I was really impressed. I'm still so stoked at the existence of the Ballad of Gay Tony.
And I only hope that they continue to include more positive portrayals in, you know, maybe not necessarily GTA 5. I would like that, but, you know.
Man, if they're, you know, if they do the whole, like, oh, your girlfriend is calling, you have to go on a date right now in GTA 5, I hope there's a gay option.
I hope so, too.
I'll be honest.
I mean, and I think before we move on, I think bridging it into a kind of a real world thing, I mean, I think that's something that's very, you know, would be very edgy, well, not edgy, but kind of a daring to explore, is, you know, the kind of concept of sexuality in the, like, well, thug gang life.
And, you know, something world that I didn't include on this list here that I gave you, but it is worth mentioning also by Rockstar, was that Bully did explore that sort of concept. You could definitely have, like, a schoolboy romance with another boy in that game. So
that's very true, so
I guess, thinking about it, and just talking to you about this now, it does occur to me that maybe that's the direction in which Rockstar is going, is exploring these sort of bigger issues, much in the same way that BioWare has always made their modus operandi.
Exactly.
And, you know, another notable character in a Western game, and we're going to come back to Rockstar because they have done the flip side of the coin. But real quick, I just want to mention, you know, BioWare had a notable character in Cortez in this year's Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
That was a character who had a husband he was wildly in love with, lost him in the war, and very respectfully, very, very humanly is portrayed as, you know, a man who lost the man he loved.
And I think the thing that's significant, particularly about 3, I mean, you know, you could have a lesbian relationship in Mass Effect 2 with Kelly Chambers, who was kind of like the, you know, the one who would feed your fish and stuff, and all that. She was kind of the one who, like, knew all the gossip and stuff around the ship. But, and, you know, with even though 1 kind of didn't really touch gay relationships. I mean, Liara kind of, but, you know, then they're like,
and the
Asari
consort, you know, it was really more playing to the salacious tip, though. When I hear people talk about pandering to teenage boys that wanted to see lesbians make out, that first Mass Effect game is the only one where I really feel like that was a little bit true.
Yeah, I mean, then remember, you know, in the mainstream media heard, oh, it's a outer space sex simulator, and all that sort of thing. But, I mean, particularly in 3 with the, you know, Kaden is romanceable.
And really, just touching. I don't know that this is content that anyone out there will, that, you know, some of our heterosexual listeners will ever see. But it is really touching. And, you know, it is probably touching when you have a heterosexual relationship in that game, which I'm actually working on right now. I'm working through a new playthrough with a heterosexual character. But when your gay relationship character is in your active squad and, you know, you split up at the very end of 3 and there's a very touching, like, goodbye.
Now, this was in the extended cut, we have to point out.
Well, in the extended cut, I felt this way even in the original release, but especially in the extended cut. It's just really, it's heart-wrenching and so well done. It is one of the more emotional moments I've had,
I mean,
from a game narrative.
A lot of our gamer gay friends, like, seriously were like, No shame. I was in tears at that, and I mean, I teared up too.
Yeah, it was. I.
But I mean, getting back to
getting
specifically
back to three. Crux.
Oh, well, I was going to say getting back specifically to three. I think the significant thing to point out is that, you know, even though one kind of skirted around the issue and two kind of played with it a little more, but I mean, in three, I mean, the idea of homosexual relationships in the, you know, time period in the future that the franchise is set in, it's no big deal. I mean, like, you know, nobody, like, really seems to be shocked that Cortez had a husband. And I mean, even, you know, Vega even kind of, in a bro sort of way, almost flirts with him.
Oh, yeah.
It.
James Vega, who is a soldier in this game, definitely, he just has, like, a cool bro attitude about it. And I really feel like that speaks to certainly the sorts of attitudes that I see in my life from the heterosexual people around me. You know, it's just like a funny thing. It's not drama. It's not unpleasant. It's just like, pff, lol, gay. And I think that's fine. I love it. They have like a vaguely, not, I wouldn't call it a flirtatious relationship, but a playful relationship. And one of the things that is playful is that the Steven Cortez character, he and Vega, you know, they're very playful about Cortez's sexuality, much in the way that most heterosexual men I know are, that are comfortable with their sexuality, are with their gay friends. And, you know, it's just sort of the same locker room humor that I think pretty much all dudes are guilty of. Well, not guilty, but, you know, that pretty much we all do. That sort of,
I mean, like,
sexist, funny, dude bro, shoulder punch.
Bringing it back to the real world, I mean, we do that to our straight friends about,
oh yeah, about
anytime,
their girls
and everything.
Anytime,
so, you know,
I know, I mean, a dude who's with a new girl, I ask all the locker room questions. And that just speaks to how people really talk.
And, you know, something that's kind of interesting, and I mean, I think since we've kind of determined that we'd like to explore female issues and issues of femininity, we're coming at it also not only as gay men, but as men. So, I mean, that's also something that would be very interesting, like, you know, to hear about how a lesbian playing a lesbian femshep, you know.
I'd be very interested to hear that, yeah.
But, you know, BioWare, and I mean, I think that's kind of the thing that a lot of people were surprised about. Even though I was a latecomer to the franchise, I mean, I still remember hearing about, like, oh, wow, Mass Effect 1 doesn't have gay options, even though Jade Empire, right, was...
Jade Empire did. I think that, you know, I was going to say I think that was the first BioWare game that did, but I'm pretty sure even in, like, Baldur's Gate and stuff, I think there was homosexual options.
And I mean, of course, in Dragon Age, you can...
Oh, yeah, Dragon Age. Dragon Age 2 is, like, one of the gayest games I've ever played, and I've played Choiniki.
But yeah, I mean, BioWare...
And that's actually, you know, and we could, again, we really need to start moving on just from the characters topic of this discussion, but there's also a wealth of homosexual characters that are developed and have storylines between the Dragon Age and let's just say between all of the BioWare games
dating
back since forever, they have definitely represented, you know, homosexual characters mostly without bias and negativity.
You know, but one last thing about BioWare before we move on is that it was interesting that even though they had stated that eventually in the Old Republic, and, you know, I honestly don't follow the Old Republic much anymore, it kind of had its heyday, but they mentioned that, you know, they intended to have gay relationships, but then George Lucas says that there's not gay, homosexuality doesn't exist in the Star Wars universe, or some bullshit like that, but...
Well, that has always been his stock response to the homosexuals in Star Wars. He has always just said, oh, that doesn't exist in this universe. And, okay, I mean, that's kind of jank, but whatever. You have every right to that, and I'm not going to stop you. You make children's movies about people flying through space with swords made of light.
Yeah.
Anyway, back on point. Rockstar, negative representation of gays, but I appreciate that they did it. You had Vincente De Santo in Red Dead Redemption. And that guy was implied to rape boys.
Now, on one hand, people could run with that and be like, oh, well, that just shows that all homosexuals are pedophiles, but, you mean...
But to me, it's kind of daring to really go there, and, again...
I agree.
The problem isn't that he's gay. The problem is that he's a rapist.
Yeah.
Like, rape in that game is not something that is viewed as an okay or desirable thing.
Well, I mean, I don't think rape is okay or desirable in any
Oh, gosh, aspect. No. I certainly hope not.
But,
Maybe Battle Raper. That's a real game. Battle Raper. I played it.
Why am I not surprised?
It's a fighting game like Soul Calibur, where as you fight each other, your clothes get stripped off, except you're not wearing underwear underneath.
Now, are you able to be gay in Battle Raper?
There's one male character, but there's not really, like, sex content in Battle Raper.
Oh, okay.
So, again, I don't condone rape. I don't think rape is funny. But someone told me there was a fighting game where you knocked each other's armor off and there was a dude in it. I had to play it.
Agreed.
So, and my thing with DeSanta in Red Dead Redemption is not that I think it's cool to represent boy rapists. I don't think boy rapists are awesome. But I do think it's cool that Rockstar, while, again, as we've said in previous games, has definitely, without bias, had homosexual representation in their games, they also have sort of gone the villainous path. And, again, I think that the ultimate goal of all characters of all orientations and types being represented includes villainous characters.
Yeah, I think it's very significant that Rockstar is not afraid to just go out there. I mean, honestly, when you make games like GTA, you kind of have to just go all the way and do what you're going to do, because people are going to kind of lash out anyways. Now,
so, to get through this, because we're already running far behind schedule for what I had thought, but, you know, we again, there was... It turned out to be kind of a lot to talk about just in characters, not even...
Right, and before we move away from characters, there's one very, very significant one that
we're going to do three characters in one. Four characters in one. I want to talk very specifically about Poison, Birdo...
That's the one I was going to talk about.
Vivian...
Yes.
And actually, this fourth one doesn't fit here, so we're actually just going to talk about Birdo, Poison, and Vivian. Vivian is a character from Paper Mario. And these three characters share something interesting. Why don't you share that with the class?
Well, I'm just going to kind of bring my Birdo perspective into it. You know, this is probably about 10 or so years ago. I would tell people, you know, just being a nerd about Mario, I'm like, so talking about Mario 2, I would be like, oh, you know that in the booklet, you know, in the booklet for Super Mario 2, that it specifically says that Birdo is a male who thinks he's a girl and wears a bow on his head, and that he would rather be called Birdette. Now, at the time, you know, 10 or so years ago, I would tell my friends this. They're like, you're bullshitting me. But then, it was great, because when I finally met you, I was like, so, like, blah, 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 Birdo, and you're like, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, I was that kind of person. I read these instruction manuals. I loved the art in them. And honestly, even when I was a young boy, I freaking loved how subversive it was that in this little booklet, like, oh, Birdo prefers to be called Birdette. Like, that's awesome! and, you know, the reason why I'm grouping these three characters together is that these are all characters whom have these sort of transsexual identities that were formed because of, you could say, mistranslation or translation inaccuracies, but rather than, like, correcting it, the respective publishers of games that these three characters are in have really grabbed it and ran with it.
Now, with Birdo, they've kind of retconned that, and I don't think...
If you play the Mario Tennis games and listen to Birdo's voice, I still feel like that subplot's in play. It's just
really
a little more tongue-in-cheek.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, because, I mean...
Because Birdo sounds like a toad. Okay. Like, it definitely feels like a transsexual, like...
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, because the thing that, more specifically with Birdo, is that Birdo's always been Catherine in Japan, right? Always.
That's definitely my understanding.
So, I mean, it's interesting, like you said, the translation issues, but, I mean, it's also kind of interesting. I mean, this could be a whole other discussion just about Birdo and Yoshi being, like, kind of a pair, but let's not get into that.
I think we'll do an episode on localization and translation at some point, but either way, and so, you know, Poison is noteworthy, you know, from Final Fight, Capcom, because Capcom has really gotten in front of this thing, and what was initially done, and again, not exactly as a mistranslation, but because Capcom had an issue with, you know, publishers, Sega and Nintendo at the time, saying, oh, you can't beat up on this woman, so Capcom was like, oh, that's not a woman, that's a man in a dress. And from that, now, the official canon for the character Poison is that she is, depending on your region, in a different state of post or pre-op, transsexual. And this is a character whom you can go and buy cheesecake statues of, like, straight up, like, her holding her breasts in, like, tight white panties, like, at cons. And no, that is meant to be a post-op transsexual.
Which, I mean, is also... could potentially be interesting to think about, you know, the fact that, oh, well, Sega and all these other publishers were like, oh, okay, well, you can't beat up on a woman, but oh, okay, you can beat up on a transsexual. And I mean, that's kind of a little bit frightening.
You know, it's... that is like a whole can of worms that Capcom could get through beating up on a transsexual, but not get through beating up a punk rock woman. And I mean... that's great. Certainly, depictions of woman beating, if we want to take things to its logical conclusion, the problem should have been, I guess, just beating up on anyone with too realistic a depiction.
Right.
But I guess it becomes a matter of where is the line drawn, and in the 80s, the line was drawn at women, but not at transsexuals. And that's sad, but it also speaks to where things have gotten now, that would be a consideration now.
Agreed.
And then the last one, and I believe this only goes for the American version, but the witch Vivian in Super Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door, whichever one of these fucking Paper Mario games had Vivian in it. I think it was Thousand Year Door. Is a transsexual in the American version. And in the Japanese version, I believe it might just be a man... who does perverted things. Like, I believe the issue was something about a scene involving, like, being a peeping Tom or something. And so, oh, if we make it, like, a transsexual, then it's not that weird because she sees herself as a woman, but if she's a man, she's being a pervert.
I mean, I think the thing with Vivian and with Birdo is, like, these are Mario games, people, so I mean... And I think it's a big... significant part of it is also, you know, Japanese attitudes towards, you know, these sort of representations in games. But, yeah, I mean, we're talking about Mario games, like, you know, super family-friendly Mario, happy G-rated realness, you know? But no, there are some subversive things. I mean, you may... out there, if you're still listening, you know, if you weren't one of the people who was, you know, bothered by the concept of a gay discussion, you maybe are like, no, the Birdo thing was just poor writing in the booklet. She was never intended, but, you know, that's where we're coming in with our perspectives. Like, anytime, you know, if I'm doing Yoshi and Birdo and Double Dash or something, I'm like, oh, hey, Birdo, you know? It's just kind of this little subversive thing to me still.
So, I actually had this switched, and you're quite right, and I think that that's quite interesting, but I had it switched. It's the Japanese version of Thousand Year Door that Vivian is, in her character description, she appears to be a girl but is really a boy. and constantly refers to herself as a her, and then other characters throughout the game, you call her a him to insult her.
Wow.
And that's actually the con... I knew that there was, like, sort of like a gender issue here, and I totally skewed it in my head, which I apologize for. But truth is actually almost more interesting than fiction. All of this stuff was removed in the U.S. release and European release, where they just insult her by calling her ugly. Which, dude, hella rude. But in the Japanese version, apparently she's a transgender who is being ridiculed by villains for being transgendered.
Wow.
In a Mario game. So, I apologize for what I had recollected from memory being incorrect earlier, but this is almost more interesting to me that, you know, I guess I can't say current anymore since this game is now, like...
It was a GameCube game.
8 years old now. Came out in 2004, but apparently in 2004 in Japan, it was still okay to make fun of a transgender for being transgender in a Mario game.
In a Mario game.
So...
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a little taken aback. I was so wrong on that, and I'm actually a little bummed by it. Moving on. I don't really want to talk about gay characters anymore. Ever. No. I want to talk about a couple of games that are notable that have LGBT... plot lines and subplots.
Tingles, freshly picked robes.
Well, that has homosexuality in it accidentally, because...
Well, that's the one with the gay builders, right? Or is that the other Tingle
game?
Oh,
yeah, no, you're right. There are gay builders in that game.
Although, it was one of the Tingle games.
I think Tingle himself actually has a romance with a woman.
Tingle is a whole other can of worms. That's like a whole other show discussion about Tingle, but no, not really.
Oh, good. I'm looking at our list here, and several of the talking points that we were going to hit with these games we talked about while talking about characters.
Indeed.
So let's just get those out of the way real quick. You know, we talked about the Ballad of Gay Tony and why that's an important way to represent homosexuality and LGBT culture in games. We talked about Persona 4 and sort of how content and experience flavor the way that we experience these stories.
Definitely.
And again, I really value the discussion that we had about Persona 4 with our listeners because it sort of informed for me that the way I read this story... definitely could be one possible interpretation of many. And while I stick by it, as I said earlier, I think it is really, truly just as valid that he was simply confused and questioning and had issues with his gender and masculinity, being, you know, a male character in a Japanese game who likes to cook and, you know, do traditionally feminine things in Japanese culture. What we didn't discuss, of course, is Indigo Prophecy, which was a very popular adventure game, which had several gay characters that were dealing with exploration on homophobia. Like very specifically, like these characters being dealt with being discriminated against. Which I can't really think of any other game that has so explicitly explored that. I mean, I guess maybe Paper Mario Thousand Year Door in Japan? But no, I don't think that's a serious exploration of these issues. Have you played through Indigo Prophecy?
I haven't, but I think I'm going to have to now. Sounds like a very important game to play.
Yeah, I think so. From a game design perspective, I think it's interesting to look at and contrast Mass Effect 3 and Dragon Age 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Dragon Age 2, basically every character is bi. If they're a romance character, you can romance them with a man or a woman. Regardless of their own gender.
I like that.
Mass Effect 3 sort of takes the tack of Cortez, for example, is a homosexual man. If you're a female Shep, you can befriend him, but you cannot get in bed with him. You cannot make a passionate, committed relationship with him.
I think it really just comes down to how much they want their character to have an identity of being, you know, this specific character, as opposed to Dragon Age maybe being a little bit more like, oh, well, you can kind of craft your own
world story. And
I think both are valid.
Yeah, well, I definitely think both are valid, but it's worth looking at, you know, these are two different styles of design and two different ways to develop a character, and I think it's interesting to look at the different paths that BioWare has taken to represent LGBT characters over the years.
I mean, there's, you know, even when we talk with our friends about Mass Effect, regardless of their sexuality, there's always a character like, oh, I wish so-and-so would have been romanceable by this Shep. Or, you know, so, I mean, it's interesting that by choosing to have these characters with, you know, that are very clearly, you know, have their sexual identity set, kind of locks out a possibility, like, you know, yeah. Like, oh, my dude Shep can't have a romance with Garrus.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll admit there are certainly some characters in Mass Effect that I wish were romance options for men, but I think I prefer having a character who has his own sexual identity, and if that's compatible with the character I made, cool, and if it's not, then, well, next time I'll make a character that is.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Fear Effect 2, Retro Helix. This was sold in America as sort of the first big, like, lesbian sex game. There was a lot of very provocative magazine advertisements featuring women on women fondling, caressing, and I believe implied kissing. And so this game very much used its lesbian content, its LGBT content, you could say, as a selling point. Like, to sort of that 13-year-old boy, dude, bro audience that we were talking about, Mass Effect often being accused of pandering to. I don't really have a lot to say for Fear Effect 2. I thought it was a sloppy Resident Evil clone with the survival horror replaced with, like, cheap, poorly written espionage.
Well, I mean, to go back on that concept of lesbianism as a selling point, wasn't that kind of what Blood Rain did as well?
You know, I believe Blood Rain, beyond the hot chick that fights vampire Nazis or whatever, I believe that also used some lesbian content as a selling point. Yeah, I think you're right.
That was kind of provocative to me as, you know, as a teenage boy.
I thought that was a better game than Fear Effect, which should tell you what I think of Fear Effect.
I mean, Blood Rain games are still being made to this day.
Definitely. WayForward just made one. We talk about WayForward on here all the time.
And it was actually, you had said it was pretty good, right?
It's a competent Metroidvania-style game. I mean, loosely Metroidvania. It's a little more linear. Maybe sort of more like Order of Ecclesia, if you're into the Metroidvanias. With a sort of very deep combat system, which you don't typically see in that sort of game. Whereas Fear Effect 2, I mean, literally, no one listening to this podcast would know what Fear Effect was if not for the lesbians. That's how strongly that game was sold on that concept. And there was, I'm pretty sure, a third Fear Effect game, but I literally don't know anything about it, probably because it's not lesbians.
Yeah, it's probably just not lesbians. I mean, I think we'll probably even be able to touch on that concept a little more when we have a discussion about femininity in games. And
yeah, in fact, I will dig out, because I own a copy of Fear Effect 2, I'll dig it out just so that we can talk about that.
And I mean, because, you know, there's the whole issue of, like, the booth babe culture and everything. So, I mean, it reminds of a lot of interesting points, but
anyway, this is not something that Radioland needs to hear about. And then, the Shadow Hearts series, which I discussed earlier, you know, there are loads of gay characters in the Shadow Hearts games. Some of them have gay drama, some of them have drama completely unrelated to their sexuality. Just really, it's really interesting the breadth and width to which these characters' lives are explored in these JRPGs, despite the fact that they are mostly just background characters. I really feel like that is one of the unsung heroes of JRPGs in that era, you know, the sort of PS1, late PS1, early PS2 era of games. A lot of JRPGs in that era, and I really feel like the Shadow Hearts games are way overlooked, despite having been really great games that put a lot forward out there. And sort of the last notable game that I'm going to talk about, it doesn't really have a plot to speak of, you know, I mean, outside of being a Speedo-clad muscle man flying half-naked through space eating globs of protein.
Of course,
Choeniki. Which, of course, if you're familiar with the Japanese language at all, it most easily translates to Great Brother. Choeniki is worth mentioning to me personally, because they once ran an article about it in Electronic Gaming Monthly in the early 90s, and simply referred to it as the homosexual shooter. Now, I can't really speak positive or negative about that comment in Electronic Gaming Monthly. I can't source the specific issue that was stated in, although I'm sure some quick Google foo could probably fix that. But this is a game that was so gay and so notorious for being so over-the-top gay that it even became known to Americans as being a gay shooter.
I mean, even for us gays, it's kind of a long-running joke, like, Choeniki.
Yeah, in fact, even still, you can boot up your PS3 or your PSP right now and find Japanese copies of the Choeniki games for sale in the U.S. PSN store, you know, and they're sold in Japanese as import games, of two different Choeniki games. There's Choeniki for PS1, which is a PS1 classic, and also I think it was Choeniki Zero for PSP is available for download. That's how sort of notorious these games are. And
yeah, it really has a cult following. And,
oh, you know, definitely. If you're not familiar with Choeniki, I implore you, either just download one of these games. They're like $6. That's not that much money.
And they're great fun.
Oh, they're super fun.
I mean, there's one where you're like in a penis spaceship, right? Or something like that.
The one that really sticks out to me is the elderly male ballet dancer who has a giant duck penis come out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really, like, it makes Monty Python look, like, totally normal. That's what we're dealing
but
with.
But if you don't want to waste the $6, just, we'll post a YouTube video. If we can find a safe for work video, we'll post a video on our website over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Just so you can see it. It's noteworthy because it's so over the top as to become internationally known, even in the 90s.
For its gayness, basically.
For its for its LGBT content.
Yes.
And again, we need to start wrapping things up, but our big recommendations to you guys to play, if you're really interested in exploring this kind of content for yourself, we really recommend The Ballad of Gay Tony, Persona 4, and Persona Innocent Sin, any of the Shadow Hearts games. And one game that I very intentionally avoided talking about here, and that's Nier. Nier is a fairly obscure action JRPG that came out in this console generation, and there is a LGBT subplot that is sort of a shocking twist that is played for serious high drama.
I'm going to have to play that.
I don't want to discuss it here because knowing it ahead of time would make the revelation less interesting. but I was really impressed to the point that that game, which while I was playing through it, I was like, oh, I'm not really sure how I feel about this game. And when I got to that point, I was like, wow, I am so impressed that this totally changed how I felt about this game. So, and it also has some really great writing, like, even removed from that. That game has some great writing, yeah. Some inventive action, great music, and, you know, some really poor visuals that occasionally look super good. Like, overall, not a super
good. Are they visuals that look like dung?
Oh, they look like dung.
And I think one thing to quickly point out about Gaytony is that if you're not interested in playing GTA 4, you can play it separately.
Yeah, Ballad of Gaytony, along with The Lost and the Damned, which was another cool expansion, are both available as Liberty City Stories, I think it's called. For separate purchase, you can find that on Steam or XBLA or PSN. And I really recommend both Lost in the Damned and Ballad of Gaytony. I'm not a big fan of any of the GTA games. That's just not my cup of tea. But I actually found both of those narratives to be really worthwhile. And I'm a hard guy to sell on narrative in games. So I cannot recommend those games highly enough. And I believe, at this point, we're going to move away from the gay in so much as is possible. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on. So, yeah, you know, we got some positive feedback from you guys about talking about sort of what's up. So we're gonna do that. We're going to keep doing that. This week, I am playing Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy. It's a 3DS game. We discussed it earlier in this episode because it had some DLC that definitely supports the idea that Final Fantasy Versus 13 is still coming. But if you're not familiar with Theater Rhythm, it is a Final Fantasy-themed rhythm game. Now, it sounds gimmicky as hell. It sounds terrible. And I guess I can't really explain it. If this music, the Final Fantasy music, has any meaning to you, you will love this game in every possible way. There are several different kinds of beat charts, like different game mechanics for different songs, which is really cool because the game itself, it has more than 70 songs before you start counting DLC. And that sounds like, oh, that might be too much, but because of all these different styles that songs can have beat charts done, it's actually, like, really a cool and refreshing game to play. So that's definitely, that's what I've been focusing on. I've also been doing a lot of Steam gaming, but I feel like most of those Steam games I'll be talking to you about next week.
Right, and speaking of Steam, I mentioned earlier that I'm trying to support the indies a little more, and I've finally gotten around, thanks to the Steam sale, to getting around to some of these very celebrated indie games that, you know, Super Meat Boy, Cave Story, Bastion, things like that. You know, I actually even finally played Plants vs. Zombies for the first time. I honestly had never played it properly.
My mom has played that.
Yeah, well, there's a little quest in World of Warcraft that is a an homage to that, so I've done that, but, you know, so I actually played that, but I really want to focus on Super Meat Boy and Cave Story. Bastion, I'll just mention really quick, and, you know, I haven't finished any of these yet. Bastion is interesting, but it almost feels like the narrative is kind of being shoved down your throat, like...
Well, that's my problem with Bastion.
Trying to be very heavy and gritty and...
It's an incredibly beautiful game. I will definitely finish it someday. I have a really hard time with tutorials or any time a game needs to tell me its story before I can continue playing it.
My thing is that it was almost like, I'm not going to say depressing, but it was just kind of like, it's a very heavy game. And
to be fair, one of my best friends in the world commented that that game made her cry.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I kind of think I just will need to be in the right mindset to play it, but it's kind of like, oh, the kid's all alone in the world. Here's a sword, and he's gonna kill some monsters. And so, I mean, it's not that I think that that's a negative aspect. I'm just kind of like, you know, because I was, this is in the context of having played Super Meat Boy and Cave Story, which are both very cute games and really, really well done. But yeah, so I mean, I really think out of all the indie games, and I've bought some more that I'm looking forward to playing that I may talk about next week, but, you know, right now I'm just really, really having a great time with Super Meat Boy, and I was mentioning to you a couple days ago when I was playing through Super Meat Boy that I was playing that first boss battle where you're kind of running away from the guy with the chainsaw thing that Dr. Fetus is driving, I believe, and, you know, I was like, that was the first time in a long time that, like, a boss battle was exciting to me. And, I mean, like, you know, the thing with Super Meat Boy is that, you know, it's super easy to die if you're sloppy in, like, a very Mega Man sort of way. I would almost argue that, you know, you've got to be very tight with your controls. But there's something about Super Meat Boy that I'm just like, you know, I really want to figure out how to get through this puzzle, so.
Yeah, that game is just platforming as a puzzle challenge is really Super Meat Boy.
And Cave Story is just a cute little gem of a game.
Oh, I love it. Well, it's very much a Metroidvania in an almost sort of 8-bit style of game design. With enough modern finesse that it isn't frustrating or irritating.
Yeah, it's so cute. So those are the two that I'm really looking forward to playing, to spending some more time with. You know, and like I said about Bastion, I'm still gonna definitely give it a try. I mean, the music's beautiful, the artwork's beautiful, and I mean, the gameplay is pretty fun. I think I really have to be in the right mindset to want to play that. And I think maybe, like I said, maybe some of it was colored because Super Meat Boy's very silly. You know, I mean, Bandage Girl is the love interest. Dr. Fetus is a fetus in a jar. That's the villain. And, I mean, in the Cave Story is very cute. Like, there's little bunny people, and it's just a very charming game. So, I mean, I just think that that might have kind of colored my initial perceptions of it. But, yeah, I'm definitely trying to do more to support the indie games. And, I mean, because kind of this whole, you know, thing with Polytron just kind of made me be like, damn, you know.
Yeah, these guys, they work real hard to make content for us, and, you know, if you venture out into the world of indie games, there's so much going on, there's so many incredible games, it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to exploring that more, and you actually had some indie game-related news, didn't you, to share?
Yeah, in fact, probably the indie game I'm most excited about playing in the future, more specifically in March of 2013, if all goes as planned, is that Super Retro Squad, a game which I've been following very closely as it progressed through its Kickstarter, has been funded. And Yay. It was successfully funded with enough sales that they are adding an additional level to their design document based on Blaster Master.
That's great.
So I am stoked. Blaster Master, to me, is one of the all-time greats, like one of the all-time unsung heroes, so to speak, of just really superb, amazing, tight game design.
And, I mean, I had a lot of fun with Super Mario Crossover.
Yeah, of course, for those of you who aren't familiar, Super Retro Squad is basically a version of Super Mario Crossover done with characters that are made in homage to all of sort of the classic great games, so that the developer can sell it and hopefully make a profit and be able to continue making games. Because obviously, you can't sell a game like Super Mario Crossover. And these guys, you know, they work hard. This guy in particular, whom I thought was a huge stoner, and then it turns out I was reading his profile online, is like super straight edge. He just likes making games that people want to play and crossing things over and making
That's
interesting
super
things
cool.
happen.
And I believe he's based out of Sacramento, isn't he?
I believe he is.
So got some kind of NorCal love going there.
So he's making a game basically where he'll own, not own, you know, in the traditional sense that it would be important, but that these will be his characters that he's made that he can put in this game where each character has a world representing the game that that character is based on. So like the Blaster Master homage character will have a Blaster Master style world to go through. for whatever character you're playing as. And you'll play through all of, like, so you'll have basically a Mario-style character playing through a Castlevania stage.
And, I mean, I think that's even more fun in some ways.
Yeah, I think this is an incredible...
I mean, because Super Mario Crossover is literally Mario levels.
Yeah, and this is almost more like, we'll have a Mega Man-style level, we'll have a Castlevania-style level.
And almost, in a way, show off his skills as a game designer.
I think so. I think if he does it right, it's going to be something really special. I backed this for more money than I thought I would. I normally back for the minimum donation. And in this case, I actually donated more than twice that, because I really believe in this guy's vision. This is really a game that I want to be able to play, and indeed, this is a game that I want them to be able to produce to the best of their abilities.
Agreed. And, I mean, we're getting a little bit off of what's up right now, but...
Well, this is something we're excited about.
One little quick thing that also kind of ties into indies is the... I don't know if I'm saying this right, but the Ouya console that was on Kickstarter...
I've been calling it Ouya.
It's O-U-Y-A, and, I mean, if you haven't heard about this, it's a console that I believe is going to be running an Android operating system. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just kind of starting to learn more about it, but I mean, the idea is that, you know, like Android devices, it's designed to be very open source, and they're really trying to encourage indie developers to buy into it. And I mean, that Kickstarter got funded like within the first day,
hours.
So, I mean, that's kind of going to be very interesting to follow.
Well, that tells me, and I also back that. I mean, that tells me that there's a real thirst among gamers for something different from the paradigm we're stuck in right now.
That's true, and that's kind of what our...
PC, PS3, Xbox, and Wii, and having everything be, like, these big, mega, AAA game designs, and not having anything else really be successful out there.
So I think it's really
exciting.
To me,
the Ouya, whatever it is, however you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah!
That's what I carry lots of extras. The Ouya is sort of meant to be a different thing and to be basically an indie game platform, like a platform for indie games. And Super Retro Squad has already been confirmed that they'll be doing an Ouya version.
That's great. And I mean, and that's kind of what our whole point is here in our What's Up section, is that, you know, kind of...
This is what we're excited about. This is what we're talking about.
That's
what we're not
like
about.
Call of Duty, bro. You know.
You know, honestly, during What's Up, despite Call of Duty not being what we talk about on this podcast, if you were playing Call of Duty, you could talk about Call of Duty in this portion of the podcast. Please don't. I would have nothing to say other than oh. But if you really wanted to, you could.
No, you know, and it's interesting that as we've taken on this segment, it's kind of as a gamer. Not challenge me, but it's kind of like, what do I want to play that's not going to be, you know, mainstream? It's kind of encouraged me almost to, like I said, invest in some of the indies. And
well, you know, that's great. I used to say in every episode of this podcast, and I really haven't been recently, but all I really want is for people to walk away from this podcast thinking a little bit differently about what they're seeing out there.
Indeed.
If you pick up a new game that maybe you wouldn't have picked up otherwise because of this podcast, and it sort of shifts your perspective on gaming culture, that is a huge mission complete for us.
Agreed.
Anyway, we're really running out of time. It's time for what I understand to be most people's favorite part of our episode.
Come on in, children. Okay, get out of here.
Yeah.
We got a doozy for
you
today.
We have a humdinger. You know, there have been episodes where we have not done this. We could not do that for an episode where this article hit. This article is by Kotaku. It is called Either the New Devil May Cry is Very Good or the Whiskey Was Really Strong. And you can basically sum this up by saying Mike Fahey liked DMC. you know, the new Devil May Cry game, the one which I'm certainly biased against as a fan of the original three games. But, Fahey was drunk. And this article is basically him saying outright, like, overtly discussing, he's not actually sure if it's good because maybe he was just really drunk. Like, I'm sorry, are you serious right now?
It's like, oh, that's cute that you're kind of trying to cater to the Spike TV Mansters crowd, but come on. Especially when we were talking about earlier that
yeah, this is
IGN,
for better,
Eurogamer, are using Kotaku as a source.
For better or worse, Kotaku is one of the premier voices in gaming journalism right now. And they literally ran a preview of Devil May Cry where their reviewer says, I can't tell you my honest opinion of this game because I was too drunk.
And published it and got paid.
And he still published it and got paid as a fucking Kotaku piece for this article. And again...
Really?
I feel the need to tell you every week. We're not doing this to be negative Nathans. The guys are getting paid to do this. There are eyes and ears to what's going on behind the scenes, to what we should be looking to. Really, these guys need to be doing better than this. If you got so drunk at your preview event for Devil May Cry that you can't tell me how the game looks at this point in its development, just don't write about it.
That's unprofessional.
It is unprofessional, but but ultimately I don't care. You're going to do what
you're
going to
do. I'm
sorry,
if this was some guy's blog spot where he somehow got to go play a preview game, or, like, you know, if it was, like, you know, a YouTube, like, drunk dude game reviews or something, then, like, that would be totally different.
No, this is, this is one of the premier voices in games journalism telling you that they can't tell us what they thought about this game because they were too busy getting drunk.
Side note, we should make a YouTube series where we get drunk and play games.
That's a horrible idea.
You're right.
We'll talk about it later.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just...
We're going to have a link to the article
and the thing
on our website, but I'm having a really hard time talking about this.
The thing that is frustrating is that, like, because of this article, I have no idea if it might actually be good because he was drunk. Like, you know, because I've heard mostly negative things about it, about the game, and, you know, but... Now it's maybe good, but we don't know because he's drunk. And that's what we're saying, you know. If you're being our voice for the gaming community, you've got to...
You need to step it up a little.
You need to step it up.
That's... I'm going to sum up how I feel about Kotaku and how I... My overriding sentiment to all of these Loltaku of the Week segments right now in one sentence.
Dung.
Kotaku... You need to step it up.
I mean, really, any games journalism.
And yeah, no, any and all. Despite that we call this Loltaku of the Week, we are open to running, and we have run, other, you know, stories from other news sources and outlets. The sad fact is that despite Kotaku having arguably, the most clout in games journalism right now, they are also by far publishing the most crap. Like, the most offensive, setting back games culture and setting back games journalism and attitudes about games journalism. Like, by far, they are the major contributor. And that's a problem.
I mean, and the interesting thing is that, you know, there are some other blogs of questionable quality on the Gawker Network, but, like, Gawker Network also has things like IO9, which is actually a pretty great site.
Oh, yeah, you know, Deadspin is superb.
But Kotaku is not so great. Now, there's that one coming up that is kind of interesting because Crescente is involved in it, right? And a couple other people. And it's...
Are you talking about Polygon?
Polygon, yes. And right now they are being... kind of hosted in a way by The Verge, and they actually seem pretty straightforward, so that's kind of good. But it's interesting because, you know, Crescente, of course,
Kotaku. You know, I just, anytime a new blog starts up, or a new website or a new magazine, although obviously it's not magazines often anymore, I always just hope that this is the one. Like, that this is going to have good reporting, that this is going to tell people what people should and need to hear, and that this is going to really communicate like adults about video games.
Well, I have to say...
And I'm just waiting.
The kind of bitchy part of me got a kick out of the fact that they had a little post about, welcome, former Kotaku commenters, or something like that, which, I mean, in some ways is a little bit bitchy and slightly unprofessional on their part, but...
Well, it's you. We've come to expect that from you.
No, but I'm saying for them it's a little bit bitchy,
too. Oh, I thought
you
meant to be bitchy for you to point it out.
But the thing is that, you know, they are saying, hey, Kotaku is not doing what they should be. So, I mean, kudos to that. So, that'll be interesting to see. But, yeah. Kotaku,
Anyway, it's time to go.
Yeah.
So, as always, we want to do our shout-outs. We want to let you guys know sort of the big podcasts we feel like you should be listening to. Orange Lounge Radio, without whom we would certainly not exist. The Nerdgasm Network, we love those guys. And if you're playing World of Warcraft still, there's no reason in the world not to be listening to the Best Little Horde House in Azeroth, or, you know, Horde House for short, and Girls Gone WoW.
Yeah, I mean, all over at the VOG Network. And, you know, not everything over at VOG Network is gaming-related, but definitely support them. They're really trying to kind of, you know, just really be a voice for geeks out there.
Yep. I believe you had one more special shout-out you wanted to
give.
Yes,
and I'm kind of, like, surprised that we haven't mentioned this already. Video Game Outsiders. You may, those of you out there who are geeks may know Michelle Madison. She is actually the co-creator of PopHangover.com. You might know that best for Damn You Autocorrect, which is always a good time. You know, she's prominent enough out there in the gaming world that World of Warcraft, in this current expansion, made a item kind of named after her character. So, I mean, she's pretty prominent, and she's actually one of our Twitter followers, so...
Yeah,
just
she's...
Have to...
Every interaction I've had with her through other means has been superb, so
yeah,
I absolutely wish them well.
We really, really thank her and VGO for their support. Please go check them out, and, you know, they're doing great things over there, so... You had a shout-out.
You know, I do, and this isn't really the appropriate venue for it, so I'm going to keep this super short. Kieran Gillen, one of my favorite comics writers, who formerly was, in fact, a games journalist with Rock Paper Shotgun. He now writes comics. He's currently writing Uncanny X-Men, which is by far the best it's been in the last 20 years.
Yeah, too bad Marvel just doesn't care about
that. Whatever, this isn't a comic book podcast, no matter how much I'd like it to be. He's doing a podcast called Decompressed, where he looks at the creation of one specific issue of a comic book each episode, and they discuss how the art was done, how the writing was done, just for that specific issue, to sort of give an inside look at how comics are created.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. It is so, and they did a really super good issue of Wolverine and the X-Men for their first issue, for their first episode. It was a great read. Or, I'm sorry, a great listen. So if you're interested in comics at all, or even just the creative process and how to put something like that together, I definitely recommend that podcast. And
that is so cool.
Again, this will be the extent of non-gaming content in our podcasts. I don't intend to go off on tangents like this very often.
Well, I definitely think that's a very cool thing to shout out to, so I support that. And, of course, if you have a podcast, although, I mean, I think most of the people who are listeners who have podcasts we're already shouting out to.
Yeah, I think we're already shouting out to our podcast.
If you have a podcast, if you have a gaming blog, if you like to tweet about games, well, if you like to tweet about games, you just need to tweet at us.
Yeah, in fact, that's great. Tweet at us. Just whoever you are, if you're listening to this, tweet at us. We probably won't make fun of you. We will almost certainly read your tweet on the air. And just have a conversation with us. We talk about what I think is some pretty cool stuff, and a conversation can't happen in a vacuum. So yeah. Let us know what you think. We'll let you know what we think.
Yeah, you might notice that we didn't have our Twitter segment today, because we did get one tweet from Dan Diaz saying that he liked our What's Up segment. So we were really glad to hear that. Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we just kind of folded that into our What's Up. So we would like to be able to feature tweets. We really like Twitter.
Yeah,
so
you love Twitter.
You should tweet at us at GameBuoy Podcast.
That's at GameBuoy Podcast. You know, and we want Facebook likes. And again, you can email us. Our email is on our website over at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And we're running late.
You know, the other thing that we would really love, and this is just kind of an ego thing, iTunes reviews.
Oh, yeah. If you want to review us on iTunes, that would be rad. Hopefully not less than 3 stars.
Yeah, we don't want to be like a Motel 6 in the podcast world.
Right? People look at us, it's like,
ew, might be bed bugs and roaches.
That's the perfect place to leave this off. So, stay cool. Keep thinking about what you're doing, what you're playing, what you're saying.
Keep an open mind.
Keep an open mind. The rest will follow.
And just think for yourself.
We're trying way too hard to make this catchphrase thing happen. So see you, Space Cowboy.